Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
I need all that sauce dripped on me. OMG.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We're back, we're cranking through the season preview podcast and today we're going to be focusing on a team that there is a fair bit of intrigue about, and that is the New Orleans Pelicans. And to talk everything that is Pelicans related, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, Jake Madison. Jake, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Josh. Excited to be here.
We've got a lot of questions about the Pelicans, so we'll get stuck straight into it. And the way we start off these shows is by talking about, you know, what players have joined the team in the offseason. I think the number one player that we're looking at in terms of joining the team, we'll talk about Cousins later, who joined last season, is Rajon Rondo, who looks as though he is going to move straight into the starting lineup, pushing Jrue Holiday away from his natural position, a move that I couldn't hate anymore. I'm interested to hear your take on that. But what did you make of Rondo signing? It was cheap, but what does it do to this team? What does it do to Jrue Holiday and what he can do? And in terms of overall ceiling on this team, do you like the move for Rondo? And how does he fit in with everything else that's happening?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of depressing when, you know, the washed up Rajon Rondo is like your number one free agent signing in an offseason. Like, this is never a good thing. But look, the way this move, it's not really about Rondo himself. The Pelicans last year, after they traded for DeMarcus Cousins, you got to have some context on this, I guess, here, struggled after the trade, particularly Jrue Holiday. And then they started running him alongside Tim Frazier in the backcourt, with Frazier taking on that point guard role and shifting Holiday a little bit more off the ball, doing some like combo guard duty, sharing the ball, not, you know, working as a two guard at times. And it made Holiday, I don't know, made Holiday play better, but Holiday played much better. And they traded Frazier this offseason, which I know we're going to hit on, and then brought in Rondo kind of as the replacement to do the same thing. So this move isn't so much about Rondo, it's does it unlock Jrue Holiday, I guess, is the bigger question. That's the best way to say how you want to evaluate this. Rondo, I mean, he's not that good anymore. You know, all these Pelicans fans keep pointing out to me that he hits like 39% of open three-point jumpers. And it's like, cool, when he does that 0.7 times a game, that doesn't do much. It just means, you know, when he gets a three and he launches one, I'm not like screaming no. So Rondo, it's fine. The question is, does it help Holiday? If it does, it's worth it. If it doesn't, this is a pretty bad looking move overall for the team.
Yeah, you're right about Rondo not being good, and I get into arguments with people. There's three groups of NBA fans on Twitter in particular that are just so irrational about their favorite player. It's not funny. One of them is Jeremy Lin, which is that a Jeremy Lin Twitter wormhole is out of control. And I know
that gets dangerous, man.
It is bizarre. And I like Jeremy Lin, and I've liked him for a long time. I think he's a good player, but people are acting like he is John Stockton mixed with Steph Curry, mixed with Russell Westbrook, every bit greatest player of all time. And it's crazy. Jeremy Lin fans are one thing. Derrick Rose fans, another thing. Oh, don't worry, he's going to be healthy. He's going to be MVP this year. I had someone tell me that there was a projected starting lineup for the Cavs that had DeMarcus Cousins in it after this, you know, rumored trade. And
I saw that. It's absurd.
I tweeted that out and I said, what the hell is going on? And the first person that responded to me said, I know, it's crazy. Derrick Rose will be starting over Isaiah Thomas. And I went, come on. Like, this is not.
It's like you're missing the point here.
This is not. Okay, this is the issue you have with this. Not the fact that DeMarcus Cousins is just penciled in as a starter and Dwayne Wade is penciled in as a starting shooting guard. Like, your issue is that Derrick Rose is starting over Isaiah Thomas. The other group of fans who are just crazy, blinded, don't see that their favorite player is not good anymore is Rajon Rondo fans, and he's just not good. And people go, you know what? No, the Bulls would have won against the Celtics if he wasn't hurt. Yeah, probably not. Like, he had two good games. That's great. But
yeah, you don't know if it was going to be any more. Everyone points to that to me too. Oh, it's like, did you see him in the playoffs? It's, also, he does. He knew their playbook and he knew everything. He doesn't know every team's playbook. And let me ask you this though: those are three interesting players you bring up. They're all point guards. Is this just a point guard issue?
That's what I've always been trying to work out, whether it is a point guard issue, because I think the most spirited debates or the most abuse that I cop is when I have these discussions. I talk about Rose. I talk about, and the thing that's weird is that Rondo and Rose used to be my two favorite players back in 2009, 2010, but I realize that they're not good anymore. So it's those three guys, and the most abuse that I cop is when I talk about like Russell Westbrook or Stephen Curry, when I have the temerity to say that Steph's a better player than Russ, and then you just get housed down with abuse from everywhere. And I don't know what it is about point guards. Maybe people just relate to point guards more because they're more normal sized and they can get behind these guys, and if they meet them, they're not, you know, staring eye to navel with these players. I'm not sure, but there is definitely a point guard bias to craziness amongst NBA Twitter, and I don't know what it is. I wish I knew.
Yeah. No, but you hit it with those three guys. I at one point was like, maybe the Pels should look at Rose, and that just brought everyone out. And then it's Lin's kind of been a rumored trade target for them for a while, less so now. But it's like, yeah, people want him really badly and think he's going to be an all-star player. And I'm like, he's good, but he's not that good.
That's exactly right. And that is, it's just a weird thing to navigate. Now, in saying all this, I really like Rajon Rondo for fantasy this year. He's getting picked at pick 100 on Yahoo and pick 90 on ESPN. And if everything goes the way we assume it goes and he plays the 30 minutes and is the starter, he's going to get assists. He's going to get steals. He's going to get above average rebounds for his position. He's going to be bad at percentages, but the volume will be low. He's a bad free throw shooter. He just doesn't take them. He takes like less than one a game. Like, he just doesn't take free throws. So it doesn't actually hurt you too much in that area. So he's a guy that when you're looking for assists in the 70 range, 80 range, like he's there, and he is going to get those minutes. There's no young stud pushing up behind him. There is Drew Holiday, but there's also no young stud shooting guard that's pushing up to take those minutes at the two to force Drew back to the one. So I feel pretty good about Rondo, even though I've just gone on to say all these things that he is not good anymore. It's all about what's his role going to be, and is it relatively secure, and is he going to get those assists? Because we know that he's going to hunt for them, and we know that he's going to pound the ball and do all this stuff. So he's going to have value. And so as much as it sounds like I'm negative on him, when it comes to fantasy, the numbers are going to be there. He's going to be able to do those things that he usually does. Now, in talking about other players that this team has acquired, Ian Clark was signed to the minimum. I think that's a really good deal for this team. And I think if there's anyone that's going to push this team to allow maybe Rondo to move to his my preferred role of him on the bench, it could be Clark playing alongside Drew Holiday. Because Clark showed some flashes. I think he'd love it if he could play the Portland Trailblazers every game. I think he shot 90% against them in three games last year. But he showed some flashes. I don't think that Clark is fantastic, but I also think there's a chance that he could be better than Rondo this season. So you would have loved the value in signing Ian Clark, but where does his role sort of fit now on this team who's got this bunch of mediocre backup?
Well, it's interesting because he's in line for a minutes bump now that the news that Solomon Hill is going to miss. You know, I'm just kind of assuming he's going to be out for the season, even if he does come back after the All-Star break. And with no other real wings on this team other than Darius Miller, who hasn't played in the NBA in 2 years, you have to figure there's going to be a bunch of three guard lineups at times. And Clark, you know, on a minimum is a great deal for the Pels. It's going to be interesting to see how he does in a larger minutes role, but the guy can shoot and score, and that's kind of what the Pelicans need. And as we're talking about this, you know, one of the biggest things is you're going to have Davis and Cousins out there. Can you put enough shooting around them? And if it turns out Holiday's not living up to that, Rondo, we're not going to get any threes out of. And whoever's playing that other wing position, whether it be a guard or a small forward of some sort, if they're not providing three-pointers, Clark's got to be one of the top guys off the bench to maybe get into the starting lineup, get a larger role to help space the court for these bigs. So I think they're going to temper your expectations of him to begin with. But certainly as the season goes on, if there's no other better option, he's certainly going to step in. And that guy's not afraid to shoot, and he's going to get plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, so he's going to be an interesting streaming type guy, maybe for some points and for some threes. He's going to be more a 14 to 16 team league guy the majority of the time. But as you said, like, I've even before the Solomon Hill injury news, I thought there's a chance that he can move into a larger role with this team, and even more so now with this, you know, bunch of three or four backup guys who will be looking to fill Hill's minutes, and he could be the one that takes the majority of that playing time there. So he is a really interesting play, especially at that sort of salary. You did touch on Darius Miller, who'd been playing over in Europe. I would say, and you can correct me if I'm way off on this, I would say that he is the favorite probably to start at small forward opening night, just given the other guys in contention are Clark and Moore and Jordan Crawford. They probably don't have the size to play there, where Miller is just a little bit bigger. But it doesn't mean that he's going to be a guy that's stuffing the stat sheet. I don't really love his fantasy value at all, but I think he's going to have first crack at that position.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. You know, I'd say right now he's the odds-on favorite to be in the lineup on opening night, but I wouldn't say, I'd say the Pels don't even really know what they're going to do for sure just yet. So he's certainly in pencil rather than ink in that lineup. And, you know, the Solomon Hill injury opened the door. This is a guy who hasn't played in the NBA in Darius Miller in 2 years. He's played well in Europe. Won a title over there. I think won like a league MVP or finals MVP, which is great. But that doesn't mean it's going to translate to the NBA. And he was drafted the same year as Anthony Davis. They were teammates at Kentucky, and he was in the second round. And the Pels, like, for 3 years, tried to give him every opportunity to win the starting small forward position, and he just couldn't do it. 3 years just basically on a platter for him to take, and never did. That's a concern. I don't know if going to Europe's all of a sudden going to make you worlds better to get that. But if he does play well, and the Pels are really high on him, they see him as a contributor in the rotation. And that's coming from their coaching staff. So, you know, certainly he's going to get minutes, which I guess in fantasy is pretty valuable, at least versus a guy who's not. Whether he produces or not, I don't know. You know, I'm in an auction league, but like as a dollar pickup late in the draft, maybe might be worth it just because the upside potentially is there. But it's certainly a wait and see. And if he does win the job, maybe then you take a look at this kind of guy. I don't want to give fantasy advice, Josh. This is your role here.
No, but what you said is right, because we look at the role and he's going to have the opportunity to grasp that role. So there are probably other guys that I would want to grab with my $1 bid at the end. There'll be guys like Joe Ingles. There'll be guys like Rodney Hood that appear for those $1 numbers, and I would definitely be grabbing those guys. But you're right. The Miller is going to be someone to have a look at. He shot, you know, really well from three the last couple of seasons in Europe. He shot 41% last year, 47% the year before that, 52% the year before that. But they're on fairly limited attempts. Like we're talking three attempts per game, like not
it's
big
also,
numbers.
It's also a shorter three-point line. So who knows, again, if that's going to translate over. That's why he's just a huge question mark. It's just terrifying that the Pels at the three spot might be starting someone who hasn't played in the NBA for 2 years. People were talking about how Quincy Pondexter before the trade was going to be a significant player. And it's like you were looking – the two wings they had on the roster outside Solomon Hill haven't played in the NBA in the past 2 years. And then all the guys they brought in to work out in like Josh Smith and Martell Webster, none of these guys played in the NBA. And this is what we're looking at. It's really depressing.
Yeah, that three spot is crazy for this team. It is depressing. And with Pondexter, as they traded him away, obviously, to create some cap space because they were pushed up against the hard cap, to me, that indicates that he's just not going to be able to play. Because if he was able to play, they just would have kept him and they wouldn't have had to give up a second round pick. And they wouldn't have had to give up cash to get rid of him when he feels like they're saying, oh, you're a small forward. I need to trade you away so I can sign another small forward, but I need to pay for the privilege of doing that by giving up cash and giving up draft picks. To me, that says that he's just not able to play and he's just not going to be able to play. Otherwise, they just would have kept him and they would have played him because they need shooting. They need what he can do. And if he was at any chance of being able to step on the court, they just would have kept him. So I see no way that he's going to be able to contribute this year. But it is just a total mess with these guys and this small forward position on this team. They also signed a couple of guys to two-way deals, Charles Cook and Jalen Jones. But as we know, that means that these guys won't be able to see a huge amount of time in the NBA due to the nature of two-way contracts. Now, we talk about the guys that have left. Tim Frazier's gone to the Wizards. Quinn Cook was cut and signed by the Hawks. Donatas Motiejunas has gone to China. And the interesting one here is Dante Cunningham, who many are speculating he will be the guy that they bring back with that extra space they created in that Quincy Pondexter trade. And then if that's the case, you would have to think that he automatically moves into that starting small forward position, despite him not being a great shooter himself.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, this situation is going to be really interesting because obviously on the surface, it looks like they're going to go after Cunningham and try and bring him back. He opted out of a $3.1 million player option. And then as we've seen in the NBA free agency this year, the money is just dried up and he's looking at minimum deals maybe. And he certainly wants more. This is a guy who's never made a lot in his NBA career. But I wonder, you know, I think the Pels might try and make a run at him to bring him back, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. I think he might be a little bit upset with the team and not want to come back here unless the money's really right. So I know it doesn't really work for fantasy, but you know, the Pels might overpay to bring him back is what potentially they're looking at. Cause I think there is a bit of some hurt feelings going on there, but yeah, if they do bring him back, he's the guy who would immediately go into the starting lineup. He's been a starter for the team, you know, in spots and spurts here and there for a number of years. He actually led the team in 3-point shooting percentage last year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just, again, more depressing things to bring. I'm going to be really sad at the end of this.
We'll get to the good stuff later.
But yeah, you know, but that's on like 2 attempts per game. So it's not, again, like he's going to give you threes or anything. He's a solid guy, but, you know, not really a guy you'd necessarily want for fantasy. But again, anyone who's getting 30 minutes a game is probably worth a look.
Yeah, they definitely require your attention. It doesn't mean that they're going to be a must-draft guy, but they're going to have waiver-wire potential. A name that hasn't really been brought up, I don't think, for the Pelicans, maybe I've missed it, is a player who's around, who plays that position of need, is Shabazz Muhammad, who has been talking about Minnesota and the Lakers. I think that he would work pretty well. And if he came here, he'd be the definite starter at small forward for this team. But I haven't really heard that name mentioned in terms of the Pelicans. It's all just been really Cunningham. And then, as you said, these Josh Smiths and Martell Websters, which just seems like an absolute... Imagine Josh Smith, Rajon Rondo, and DeMarcus Cousins on the same team. That is just...
This is going to go well, right?
You might as well just relocate or fold the franchise down. Like that, it's just not going to last. Like it's not going to happen. And that's just the fact that it's even considered is just baffling to me. But have you heard anything about Muhammad and the Pelicans? I think it would work. I think it would fit okay. It's not great, but
yeah,
it would fit okay.
Yeah, I think it would be okay, especially for a stopgap. The reason I think he hasn't really been linked to the team, one, is they haven't had the money he was probably looking for before working on this trade here. But the bigger situation was they're so worried about this defense on the Pelicans. The past couple of seasons, they'd ranked in the bottom third, and last year they finally got up to 9th best overall. And Solomon Hill was really the key to that, since he was able to guard 2s, 3s, and 4s, and you have this positional versatility. And I just don't necessarily see that with Shabazz, but... The other thing is, outside of Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins and maybe Holiday, and I'm really not high on Holiday going into this year, unfortunately, it's who's going to score and who's going to score the rock here. And a guy like Shabazz could do that, and there's not really anyone else that you'd necessarily trust to get you points when you need them.
Yeah, so look, I don't think it's going to happen, but I would be really interested in Muhammad if he did come across to the Pelicans and was able to start at small forward. They had one draft pick after they traded away that selection in the first round to get DeMarcus Cousins. They had pick 31 due to some wheeling and dealing with the Charlotte Hornets. And they drafted Frank Jackson, but in true Pelicans style, he has a broken foot and he is going to be missing a chunk of games this season. Probably going to miss over half the year. He's going to be clearly behind Rondo and Holiday and Clark in that rotation. But at pick 31, it's a valuable pick. So Rondo's not going to be around long term. What do we just sort of write this year off for Jackson, but what do we see with him long term moving forward?
Yeah, you definitely write it off. And but they like him. I mean, this is a guy who's a freshman available in the second round due to a variety of reasons. One, the other foot injury he had before the second foot injury, which is always exciting. and also, like, everything this offseason, like, thinking about it and talking about it with you makes me sad. Like, freshmen in the second round, like, should not get you excited. That's usually not a good sign in the draft. But, you know, he left probably a year early from college anyway, because there was another guard coming in that was going to push him out. But they really are high on him. They saw first round talent, at least at the end of the first round, that was available to them in the second. And that's why they traded up after, you said, the wheeling and dealing to make a move and get him. They think this is a guy who can work really well off the ball and doesn't need the ball in his hands necessarily to make things happen. And when you've got bigs in Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and Cousins in particular, where they're going to run at times some of that Denver style of offense that they ran with Jokic last year, you need guys who can dart around, cut, catch, and shoot. And this is a guy in Frank Jackson that they think fits really well long term with that. In the future, I think he's going to get some serious minutes in a year or two. Not yet, but you know, eventually he's going to work off the ball and get it, potentially be a starting two guard for this team.
Yeah, I can totally see that. So he's a guy that picked at pick 31, but if you're talking about dynasty rookie drafts, he's going well ahead of that spot. Like, there are plenty of guys in the 20s that I would have him ahead of, guys like Tyler Lydon, Andres Pasechnik, all those sort of guys. Like, I would be valuing him higher than those players, even though he's going to be pretty much a write-off for this season. The other write-off we talked about is Solomon Hill, who's torn his hamstring. Maybe he does a Chris Middleton and comes back in March, but I don't think we're going to see very much out of Solomon Hill this year, so you can pretty much scratch him off any sort of draft board.
Even if he was healthy, it's not like you're getting a lot out of it. He scored 7 points per game, and he was the Pelicans' biggest signing last year. Defensively, he does a lot for this team, a lot. You know, it doesn't show up on the scoreboard and necessarily in fantasy stats, but that's a guy who contributes in that aspect. But no, he's not going to be doing much next or this season.
Now, let's talk about Drew Holiday, because I've already said that I hate the idea of him playing off ball when you've just spent $125 million on him to be a starting point guard, and then you move him out of position for an inferior guy to come in. But I think the bigger concern we have for Drew is not just playing off ball, but what happened to him once DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis were paired up last season. And to me, it was inexplicable. Yes, his numbers fell off. He averaged 15.5 points a game for the season, but after the break, he was down to 14 points a game. His assist numbers were still fine. His steal numbers were still fine. But the weird thing that happened, Jake, was he couldn't shoot. And I don't understand why, when adding another offensive threat to take, you know, theoretically, the attention of the defense away from him, why he couldn't hit his shots. Is there any, was it just a weird quirk that for those 2 months, his shooting percentage just dropped by 20%? And he saw his true shooting go from 54 down to 51, or was there some structural reason why he was not getting into the correct spots? Like, what was it about the addition of Cousins that made Holiday just forget how to shoot?
You know, there's a number of things that were going on there. So going into the All-Star break, for about the 15 games before that, he was playing out of his mind and actually like a near All-Star level, like above 20 a game, I believe, like close to 8 assists per game, like really good numbers out of him. It's like, oh, finally, maybe they'll turn a corner with him here. And then after the All-Star break, after the trade, he really like fell off a cliff with everything. And it was bad the first couple of games, especially too. He was having like 6-7 turnover games. And a lot of it is when, and this is why they're moving him off ball, they want him to be more instinctual and less cerebral, which they're thinking hurts him. Where if he's getting out there and he's got the ball in his hands and he's trying to figure out what decision to make, he's going to be less effective. That's when he takes bad shots, or his form's not proper because he's trying to think about other things. Or, you know, the other issue was the spacing on the court. When you have both those bigs down low, and Holiday is better when he just head down, hits the rim, I think, and tries to attack, at least in that sense, he's running into a wall of guys, and then there's no room to dump it off to someone down low. And do you trust the Pelican shooters on the perimeter? Not really. So that's one of the issues there. So I think they bring in Rondo to do most of the decision making, I guess, and just kind of free Holiday up to be a scorer. And maybe that helps, because I think he was mainly in his head a little bit too much. But like you said, the shooting percentages were really bad. Part of that was he was taking shots. He's driving to the rim. He's hitting a wall of guys, and he's kind of pulling up from this awkward mid-range angle where he's got no room to go. And he's not taking the best looks. And that's part of it. So they're hoping, and like I said, the Rondo deal is really graded on, does it unlock Holiday? If it unlocks Holiday, it works. I still worry about the spacing for him, because he just doesn't have room to kind of hit the rim and do what he does best with both those bigs down low. And he's a decent spot-up three-point shooter, but he's never been a great one, so it's not like you exactly trust him to kind of hit those shots in the flow of a game.
Prior to the All-Star break, this is what he did in the 5 games before that, or the 6 games. 39-7 with a steal and 3 blocks. 15-6-2, whatever. 25-6-12 with 5 steals. The next game, 16-6-11 with 5 steals. 18-3-8 with 2 steals. 19-7-7. And as you said, they are ridiculous numbers. First game out, 6-4-4 on 25% shooting. 18-7-6 on 29% shooting. 6-3-8 on 33% shooting. He had a 1-of-9 shooting night. He had another 3-of-9 shooting night. He had a 29% shooting night. He had a 22% shooting night. It was just ridiculous. And hopefully that can turn around with a full offseason working with these guys. But it was the biggest factor, is that his shot just disappeared. And it wasn't that he wasn't getting assists. It wasn't that he wasn't getting, above average blocks for a point guard, which is what he does. It wasn't that the steals had fallen off. It was just, he just couldn't hit a single shot. It wasn't that the shot attempts necessarily dropped too much either. So that's why I have a little bit of hope for him playing with those guys. I don't look at those post All-Star numbers and go, well, this is what Drew's going to be. He's going to be this guy that can't hit anything. I think that's got room to improve it. I think the Rondo factor is more of an issue in terms of Holiday's numbers this year than actually what the Cousins' impact from last season. But I still have him as a top 50 point guard. But there is that element of risk of how he actually works with Rondo. We've seen wherever Rondo goes, with the exception of Chicago last year, that he just reduces everyone's assist numbers. Boogie Cousins' assist numbers dropped in Sacramento. Rudy Gay saw his assist numbers cut in half in the time that he played over there. And I think that's more analogous to what we're going to see with Holiday, that he's not going to be able to average those 7 assists per game, but maybe 5.5 to 6, a drop of a little bit there. And he's still going to be a valuable guy, but not the top 25 upside that he would have had if both Rondo and Cousins weren't there. And even top 30 with Cousins, I think. But I think Rondo does impact that. But he's going at pick 58 in ESPN. So I still think you can get value for him. If you get him at pick 58, I love that selection of Drew Holiday. And 55 on Yahoo is also a really valuable spot. So it's not like I'm totally out on him, because the value is there where he's getting drafted on those sites at the moment. A couple of guys. We've talked about Ian Clark. We've talked about Darius Miller. There's two guys that are on the roster from last season who are going to be in the mix for some of their shooting guard minutes. And if they step up, maybe again, they could force Rondo out of the lineup and enable some minutes at small forward. And that is Jordan Crawford and that is Etuan Moore, who played. They both played pretty well last season. How did both of these guys fit in? Do you see Moore ahead of Crawford? We talked about the need for three-point shooting. Crawford can do that. And he also showed an ability to handle the ball. Yeah, I think more than some people would recognize last season. He got his assist numbers up. So they're guys who are going to be in the rotation on a nightly basis. But how do you see them, I guess, pecking order-wise?
You know, I think right now Jordan Crawford's the lowest guy on the totem pole, which is kind of sad because he's such a fun player and I want this guy to do so well. Like, he was great last year in what, like 23 minutes, putting up 14 points. He was shooting, threes like I think he shot like 39% is what it was. Yeah, 39%. Like, that's great. And the Pels really needed that. Not only that, but he's a volume shooter. He's not scared to rip, like 8 threes a game if that's what it takes, which is something no one else on the Pelicans, prior after the Langston Galloway was moved out in the Cousins trade, was willing to do. And you sometimes just need a guy to take threes, even if he's not making them, to kind of keep the defense a little bit honest. But he's the lowest guy. The thing that kind of jumps out with that is, he was on a partially guaranteed deal this year, and it was set to guarantee, and then he and the Pelicans like both agreed to push that guarantee date further down the line, and that usually means they're going to either be looking to cut him or move him in some capacity because they didn't want that deal being guaranteed just yet. So you kind of see him as the odd man out. Probably Ian Clark's going to take his role, which is probably the safer play, but certainly the less fun one. Etuan Moore is an interesting case because he has okay size, and this is a guy who could seriously see a bump up in minutes with the Solomon Hill injury. He averaged 25 last year. He might be getting up, to 30, 32 a game, especially if they go with some three-guard lineups for periods of time. He's a solid but unspectacular guy. He shoots well enough from three. He's got decent enough size. He's only 6'4", but he's got like a 6'10 wingspan to keep him on the court and maybe play that wing position. And, he's okay enough on defense that you can get by. So I think you're looking, I think the best way to judge him might be off his like per 36 minute numbers from last year, because, someone's got to fill Solomon Hill's 30 minutes per game and potentially Dante Cunningham's minutes per game. And Etuan Moore is the most NBA ready and established player they have. So he certainly could see a bump up in minutes, which should elevate his production.
I totally agree with all of that. I have Moore as the fifth highest minutes guy on this team behind Davis, Cousins, Holiday, and Rondo at just a shade under 30 minutes. He can handle the ball a little bit as well. He can get some assists, decent steals, really good percentages for a guard also. So I have him getting that, and I also have Crawford getting the fewest minutes of those wing players in the rotation. But one thing about Crawford, you said he averaged 14 points per game in 23 minutes. He shot 48% from the field, and he averaged 3 assists per game. So people look at him as an inefficient chucker. He was efficient, and he was unselfish, and he was scoring. He was doing everything. But I also agree that he is the third, the fourth guy out of that Moore, Clark, Miller combination. He is the fourth guy who's on the outer there, who probably wouldn't have been in every minute or every night part of the rotation if Solomon Hill had have been healthy. So, the value there is grabbing someone like a Moore with a late pick, like we talked about with Miller later, because if he plays 30, 32 minutes a night, which is a possibility, now you could get 3 to 3.5 assists out of him. You could get it over a steal a game with okay percentages and 10 to 12 points and 1.2 threes. And that does have value, but maybe more for 14 team leagues. But I do agree that he is that guy that steps up and takes the majority of those minutes from Solomon Hill. Now, let's transition from the smaller guys to the bigger guys. We know it's Cousins. We know it's Davis. who's the first big off the bench for this team? We've got Omar Asik, we've got Alexey Ezhinsa, and we've got my boy Shek Diallo.
You know, this is it's in flux right now, which is, shouldn't be this late, you know, in the offseason. Well, I think it's safe to say we can rule out Omer Asik.
Yep.
I like that. One, it doesn't sound like he's healthy. He didn't play after the All-Star break last year because he had a stomach bug after. So he went to like Mexico and got like really sick, is what I told was told. And my girlfriend used to live right down where he lived in New Orleans. So we'd be out to dinner and we'd see him walking around all the time. And we saw him one time and he looked like a shell of a human. It looked
he was turning into a zombie or something.
Yeah, like they get thin and it's like, you know, I don't want to tell anyone that I got bit, but like it's starting to turn and they're going to know soon that I'm part of the undead. And that's like what he looked like. And it was pretty bad. So like you have to figure he's just out of this. And maybe somewhere in the season, they're just desperate for something and he steps up. But, you know, if they re-sign Cunningham, Cunningham's a starter. So it still leaves that question, because if they had Solomon Hill, it would be Cunningham being the first big op. I hope it's Shek Diallo. That's who I really want it to be. I don't think the coaching staff trusts him just yet. He looked really good in the NBA in the limited minutes he played last season. He excelled in the D League. And then Summer League was one of probably the five best players out there in Vegas. I think the coaching staff just isn't ready to trust him yet, which unfortunately means the first big's probably going to be Alexey Ezhinsa, unless they somehow move him to bring in a small forward and package him with a future first round pick. He can every now and then have games where he looks like a real NBA player, but those are the games when he's not fouling out, you know, or he's not putting up 9 fouls in 36 minutes if you were to average him out to be a starter, because he's a fouling machine. He has a decent mid-range game, but that's really about it.
Ezhinsa is a guy that whenever he has ever had to replace Anthony Davis in the lineup, he's always put up big numbers. He's always been rebounding, blocking shots. He can do stuff and he becomes a great DFS option and a great streaming fantasy guy. Whenever he's had to play alongside Anthony Davis, he's been a disaster. So I don't really know how to reconcile all of that with him, but it feels like they've tried him and they're just not going to be, you know, super confident with him moving forward. I want it to be Diallo as well. You talked about the end of last season. His last two games, he had 19 and 11 with 2 blocks and then 12 and 16 with a steal and a block. He can do it. The Summer League stuff you said is right. The D League stuff is all correct. He was fantastic. He's got a very, very good fantasy game as well. And I think that he can have some deeper league value this season, as I hope at some point, maybe if it's not the start of the season, but maybe we head to November, December and Ezhinsa just sucks again, that Diallo can come in and take that first big man role and play, you know, 15 minutes a night, 16 minutes a night on a regular basis. He'll get some rebounds, he'll block some shots, he'll do it with a decent level of efficiency, not fantastic, but some steals can come from him as well, and he can be a useful fantasy guy. So he should be the guy that the fantasy owners are hoping gets that role, with obviously Cousins and Davis ahead of him. He's never going to really challenge for the top 150. But if one of those guys goes down and he has established himself and can play alongside either Davis or Cousins and gets 29, 26 minutes a night, then he actually has an intrigue and he has that ability to put up numbers that would make him a worthwhile waiver wire guy. And for some of these guys on this team, you just can't say that about. But Diallo's a guy you should be getting interested in. And even in long-term dynasty leagues, there's no guarantee that Cousins remains with his team next season. So if Diallo shows enough, then maybe he moves in and he starts alongside Anthony Davis moving forward. And that would be an interesting decision for them to make. So I guess we can see how that goes. But I do really like Diallo's prospects, not only for this season, but for moving forward. Now, Jake, we saw a small sample size of Boogie and Davis playing together last season, and it didn't really impact their statistical production all that much. There's a little bit of a dip, but overall they seem to coexist fine in terms of just doing what they do. It didn't lead to the playoffs, it didn't lead to wins, but how do you see them together for a full season? Can they continue to coexist the way that they did at the end of last season, and will they be able to translate that into winning basketball, or does it require a change in one of their games to actually make that positive in the win?
No, you know, I think these two bigs do work really well together. They're both, you know, so well-rounded and so versatile, and it's not like they're, you know, prototypical hulking Omer Asik type centers where, yeah, two of those guys isn't going to work. But together they do really well, and you know, like you said, it didn't translate to wins. They played 17 games together in the 25 games after the All-Star break. The Pels were 7-10 during that stretch, but there was a period in March And Cousins missed a game. I think Davis missed a game or two as well during that run, where the Pelicans did go 10-6, had a top five offensive rating, a top five defensive rating, and actually looked like they could almost keep up with anybody in the league. And those were the games when both were putting up, you know, close to 30 a night. So you see, when things are working really well and they do get some help from the rest of the team, that's the real big question. These guys, even if they score 30 a game, they're not going to win basketball games unless, you know, Holiday's playing well and guys are hitting the three to space the court a little bit for them. But they do coexist really well, and this offense is going to be changed in certain subtle ways that I think kind of make Cousins in particular very appealing. You know, they're still going to run this fast-paced Alvin Gentry system, but people, you know, freak out when they hear Cousins in that. But it works really well because when you have, say, Davis and Holiday pushing in transition and on the break, Cousins kind of trots up the court, parks himself on the three-point line, and is wide open for a catch-and-shoot three. And I think he shot I'm sure you have the numbers in front of me. I'm trying to look at them right now, and I'm failing. But shot, I think, like 37% for the Pelicans from three last year. And a lot 36. Of that was, yeah, which is pretty good percentage for him. And did that because a lot of the time he's wide open on a catch and shoot three when opponents are trying to take away transition buckets from Davis or Holiday or whoever is going to be the guard running out there with him. So Cousins gets a lot of wide open threes that way, which I think he's still going to be able to hit this coming year. And in particular, you know, they hired Chris Finch from the Denver Nuggets to run that kind of Nikola Jokic offense where it's kind of that point center, point boogie I'm really excited for, where there's guys darting around him and he's got the ball and is able to pass. And we've seen his passing ability is pretty excellent for a big man. His assist numbers dropped here in New Orleans because they weren't running this type of thing last season. But I'd expect him to get back to around like five, potentially 5.5 assists per game if he's willing to be unselfish. So they're going to have so many different looks that they can throw out at opponents. And I think you'll see that point boogie run around 25% of the time, that these guys should put up still really good numbers for both being two bigs that kind of play similar positions.
Yeah, look, their numbers didn't really drop off that much. Anthony Davis's block numbers dropped a little bit after the All-Star break. Cousins' scoring dropped a little bit after the All-Star break, but everything else was basically the same. And what you said about the three-point shooting is important for Cousins because he did increase his three-point attempt rate, and I think that will continue to trend up this season. And that does impact his overall field goal percentage for fantasy, but he's going to start hitting more threes this year. And he's got another chance. Like I talked about Marquise Chris and Josh Richardson in the last podcast, or one of the previous podcast about the Suns, about guys who could average potentially 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks, which no one's ever done in NBA history for a season. And I think that Cousins clearly has that ability. He was at 1.8, 1.4, 1.3 last season. So he has got that the ability to do that, and I think he can actually get the threes up a little bit more. In terms of the assists, I don't agree that he's going to necessarily take his assist numbers up. He did see them decrease in New Orleans, and he was at 4.6 for the season. The last time he played with Rondo, he was at 3.3. And that's
a good point.
That did drop it down a fair bit. So that's I take a fair degree of weight on that. The fact that he already lost the assist coming to New Orleans, and now he has to rejoin Rondo, who does suck the assists out of teammates. And I think that might happen to them. So he might go from 4.6 down to 4, and I've got him a little bit under 4 at the moment. But they could also, again, hopefully go, Rondo's not good, let's just go back and run things through Cousins, run things through Holidays, get some other three-point shooters out there. Moore takes a step up. Miller shows it. Maybe, hey, he can hack it. Ian Clark takes a step up. All those things are possible, and that would increase Boogie's numbers. In terms of their fantasy value, Cousins was the 7th-ranked player after the All-Star break, better than his overall season number. Davis was 5th after the All-Star break. He was 4th for the season. So there's no real change in these guys' value, and you can get Davis at pick 7, which I think is probably the right spot, factoring in injury risk with him. Perfect spot. DeMarcus Cousins is at 13 and 15 in Yahoo and ESPN, respectively. I've got him at 14. So that zone at the end of the... Actually, I'm just doing a draft at the moment, and I had pick 12, and I said, you know what? I really want a center here because it's a two-center league. I'm taking Cousins at pick 12. So not much changes for me for these guys, and we saw them... Yes, 25 games is a limited sample, or 20 games is a limited sample, but I was pretty happy with what I saw, and it all makes sense how they can fit together, and that's exactly what
we want to
see.
And now they're going to get an off-season of work and training camp, and the Pelicans have been hammering this point last season, particularly this off-season. They want a full training camp together to get these guys on the same page, and the biggest thing, if you've seen what they've been doing this off-season, they were both in L.A. working out together. During Summer League, they were both working out together every day during Summer League, and then most recently, you saw the entire Pelicans team over at UK and Kentucky, all working out together. So these two are intent on developing some really good chemistry together and figuring out how to make the most of this opportunity of having two bigs on the court like this at the same time.
Yeah, it is going to be fun to watch how all this develops and see how all this goes. Jake, who is your breakout candidate for this team? And you can use whatever criteria you want to define breakout.
You know, I don't know if there necessarily is one. I'm not high on Holiday, as I was saying, so I don't want to call it him or something like that. It's really whoever gets that other starting spot on the court alongside, Holiday and Rondo and Davis and Cousins, because they're going to have a lot of opportunity, at least for open three-point shots. We saw the Pels, their open three-point percentages increased after the All-Star break, as it should with two bigs like that. They just couldn't hit those threes. They were one of the worst in open three-point shooting after that, shooting like 31% or something. So if they can get a guy who's capable of hitting that, there's a player in there somewhere who might be able to come in and hit, you know, two threes in that kind of role. I hope it's Dante Cunningham because he's got familiarity here and he can kind of defend multiple positions. I don't really have one. I'd say maybe just, you know, Darius Miller, because frankly he's got nothing to go, who, you know, there's no like floor for him. Yeah, exactly. So like anything he does is gonna be great. How high the Pelicans are on him is kind of intriguing, and he had other offers from teams around the league, so clearly people in the NBA think he can do something. So I'll say him just because he's got an opportunity in front of him. They're going to kind of put it on a plate again for him to get this starting small forward spot, and if he does, and he's looking at 25 minutes per game, if he hits two threes, I'm going to be happy with that, especially because no one's going to be drafting him pretty high. They should probably be pretty happy too.
Yep, exactly. There is that opportunity for him or for Clark or for Moore to really take that step up and become that, you know, maybe a guy that can crack the top 150. In terms of value guys, I think that Davis is at 7, which is totally fine. That's the right spot to draft him. I really do like Rondo. As much as I don't like Rondo, I like the value at pick 100 for him. That's a great value to be able to get 7-plus assists, 1.5-plus steals and over 5 rebounds. And we know that what his faults are, but those numbers can be really useful. So I think there's value there. And then one of those late-round guys, Etuan Moore, Darius Miller, Ian Clark, whichever one you think is going to step up. I would take Moore out of that group. You are leaning a little bit more towards Miller, but either one of those guys is an interesting late pick if you're believing in that someone there is going to step up and take that role, and they could easily be that guy. In terms of bust players, I don't really think there's anyone. I like Drew at his spot at 58 is fine. Cousins at pick 13 or 15 is totally fine, and no one else is getting drafted in standard drafts. Like, no, the only other player who has an ADP anywhere is Jordan Crawford at 144 on Yahoo, which is probably a little bit high, but I feel like that's going to be in like 2% of leagues that he was picked there. So there's no one who's really looking to be bust potential. Obviously, injuries can always derail that, but we're not factoring that in really at this point. So I think everyone is fairly valued, with Rondo being the guy who's got a little bit of significant upside at that current ADP. Before we go, Jake, want to get your prediction on wins for this team. We look at the Vegas over-unders. Vegas has the total at 39.5. Kevin Pelton projects his team at 44.2. Do you side with Pelton? Do you go under the Vegas total? How do you see this team panning out, especially now with these? And to be fair to Pelton's projection system, this was before the Frank Jackson and Solomon Hill injury news.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it necessarily changes that much. I'm worried a little bit about the defense. Before the injury, I kind of had the Pels pegged at like 42 and 40, so kind of in between Vegas and the ESPN Pelton projections there. You know, I think the top four seeds are more or less set in the West, and then after that, it's a lump of like 8 teams or so fighting for the bottom four spots, and I think the Pels are solidly in there. You know, with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, the team's going to go as far as those guys are capable of taking them, and as long as they remain healthy, they should be at least in playoff contention. I don't know if they'll make it. They could be one of those teams that's pretty decent that just misses out because it's so tight. But a little bit above 500, especially if they can get 80% of the production that Solomon Hill gave you, which they certainly should be able to do on offense. Again, 7 points per game. If they can get some of the defense, though, from him, I think they'll be okay.
Yep, I can totally see that. I think that they've got a chance to be better than, say, a Memphis, and they should be better than, you know, teams like Sacramento and Dallas and all those teams. Their potential chance to be better than the Clippers as well. If I had to pick an over under, I would take a very soft over, but I'm not set on that. And I think it's a pretty decent line that Vegas has set there. Jake, that wraps up the Pelicans season preview. So thank you for coming on and chatting about the Pelicans. Do you want to give us a plug for what you might have coming on Locked On Pelicans or any other written stuff or any other things that you've got that you want to advertise for free?
Yeah, that was a good thing, right? No, host of Locked On Pelicans, give it a listen. Look, this is going to be an intriguing season for the Pelicans. They're kind of this experiment. The league's all been moving one way with smaller, faster, everything. And the Pels realized they couldn't keep up with that, so they went the completely opposite direction and brought in two bigs. Helps getting DeMarcus Cousins for that cheap. So it's kind of this weird experiment this season. Does this kind of offense work? Do these players coexist? And it might, if it does work, send some of the league kind of heading that way and shifting how we're looking at things. So certainly the Pelicans are going to be intriguing because of this grand experiment they are. So I'll be covering it all for you guys on Locked On Pelicans all season, writing over at bourbonstreetshots.com, different things. Nothing planned just yet. But always follow me on Twitter, at Nola Jake, when I get some, you know, shower thoughts and sprout them out there, come up with some pretty interesting things. So it's going to be a fun season. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it definitely is going to be fun. Like anytime you watch DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis play, it's going to be entertaining. So the Pelicans will definitely be that, and there'll be a lot of intrigue as to how this all works out. Jake, thank you for coming on and chatting with me and discussing all things Pelicans related.
Of course, anytime, man.
All right, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and give us both a 5-star review. That would be fantastic. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jordan Crawford.